And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I am here in the studio with my two heathen partners, the late Patty Fink and the other heathen, LaRon Landis.
Hey.
Our guest, why did I introduce him that way? Our guest is Reverend Eric Folkerth from North Haven United Methodist Church. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We're
excited you're here today.
This is my first time in the new studio. I was on the air in the old place a zillion times, and y'all are just down the street.
I know. Like, that's so why we didn't think of you.
Yeah, right.
We're going to talk about, I don't know if the two of you knew, we have an election coming up.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe
are you registered?
I'll have to check and see.
You have two days, folks.
Okay.
Tuesday's the last day.
If you come
to the roundup tonight in Dallas to watch the debate, you can get registered to vote.
Mm.
So
oh, cool. If you live in Dallas County.
You can get registered anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, because there's a form you can fill out that applies to your county, and you can get registered.
And not that we can campaign for anybody, but our guest today has a wife who happens to be running for public office.
She is.
What is the office?
Court of Appeals, the State Appeals Court. Yeah.
And
my former employer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we'll talk about that off the air.
Oh.
So anyway, we thought with this election coming up, with a pastor on the air with us, how about politics and ethics?
And, you know, like Trump says, what do we have to lose?
The election? Okay, I want to start with, what's your favorite book of the Bible? Mine's 2 Corinthians.
Yeah, James. I love James and the Gospel of Luke.
And why?
Because of the social justice pieces of those, because of the very clear commands to love our neighbors and to care for the poor and the needy.
And not burn crosses on people's yards like one particular supporter of Trump did, who he didn't know enough about to repudiate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just mentioning. here's what came out this week. If you haven't heard, Patty, why don't you explain it? Because I could be accused of not speaking properly on the air.
Well, I'll try to be as tactful as I can. Lots of things happened this week. We had, you know, the week began after our last show with the vice presidential debate, and then things happened all week. One of the things that did happen, is not getting a lot of publicity, is Donald Trump did an interview and said that the Central Park Five are guilty, even though they were exonerated, DNA evidence. The man's a racist, and I'm just going to say it straight up, he is. But probably the biggest news getter is this tape that's surfaced from Access Hollywood.
From 10 years ago.
From 2005, mm-hmm. Right. Where he's mic'd and on a bus with Billy Bush, and he's going to be a guest cameo appearance on a soap opera, and they're riding the bus into the studio lot, and just filth poured from his mouth, denigrating women, describing his joy in sexually assaulting women, groping them at will, kissing them at will. He, you know, bragged that he...
And it was actually much more graphic than that, but...
Oh, yeah, I'm skipping the...
Yeah. So graphic you can't talk about it.
And that's fine. Okay, so here's my question. Why was this horrible statement the straw that broke the camel's back and not some of his other absolutely horrible, despicable things that he said about people?
I think it's a very, very good question. I don't know how to answer that because, Patty, you just mentioned the Central Park Five thing is as equally horrifying. And I hope that gets some press in the next couple of days. I think people need to really understand that. Here in Dallas County, we know something about wrongful convictions.
Mm-hmm. And exonerations.
Right? And exonerations on DNA evidence. We've had a lot of those. I'm very proud that our law enforcement community has worked on that. Here are five innocent guys who served, some of them, almost their full term before they were exonerated by DNA evidence. So there's no question they didn't do the crime.
And they have the guy who says he did it.
Right. who has confessed. And here is Donald Trump saying he still believes they did it. I mean, to me, so that's to your point, David. I'm just reiterating that. That's as horrifying to a statement to make. I don't know. I don't know how to answer why this is the one that's causing.
Because I had heard the statement, and then I thought, oh, okay, another, you know, so we'll lose a little bit more support.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it blew up.
But I love this tweet where this guy says, those who are just now finding it, these speeches or this speech vile are just only slightly less vile than Donald Trump because of that very thing. Because we've had vile from the beginning. And suddenly this gets their nerve. It's a little strange.
I don't know, it's interesting. There's been several tweets that the reason why this is the one that has broke the straw, the camel's back, is because he's referring to white women.
Yeah.
And not that that's not true, but it's just an interesting dichotomy because on one hand, that could be it. But on the other hand, you got Hillary Clinton over here, who's also obviously a white woman. And I think she has suffered dealing with, just in my opinion, horrendous sexism during this campaign.
I read one of
the fact, the way the fact that she is having to deal with something that her husband did. Well, she has nothing to do with that. She's being accused of what her husband did, I think, is just awful sexism in itself. So, I don't know, it's just interesting.
You know, I heard one other thing. In this one, he's actually saying he did these sexual assaults.
Right.
In the others, he's not saying he kept Muslims out of the country. He's saying
that's a good
policy.
Point. Yeah.
Blacks are lazy. Well, that's just his opinion. It doesn't change anything.
I think that also the difference is that we have evidence. You can hear it. You know, one of the many, I was obviously rumors that has been circulating about vile stuff that he has said for the past, 14, 16 months during his campaign. One of many is that, he didn't want any black accountants on his staff for his businesses. He wanted little short Jew guys.
But he said that on tape. You can hear him say that on tape.
Oh, that is on tape.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, they haven't played that like they were, but they're playing now.
Oh, no. They haven't played it like that. But
exactly.
It's out.
Okay.
There.
So
it's...
now this is out there. I mean, you just cannot turn it away. So I think that might have something
to do with it. And Jews are saying, what were these accountants thinking?
I do think that you may be onto something because it's a tape about his own intentions in his own life and the things that he has personally done. And that is, your political views about what you might do to Muslims or immigrants, those are horrible views, but you haven't actually done it. And this is talking about stuff he's done. So that does make it more personal for sure.
But in the earlier in the campaign, like last year, he was bragging about having affairs with married women.
Oh, absolutely. He's bragged about it for years.
So he himself is saying he's done these things.
Yeah.
But it didn't rattle and, change then.
So would that be unethical?
one of the things in our worship this morning, we talked about this tangentially. It's very, very important for me as a minister. I don't endorse candidates, but it is important to ask the question, especially as Christians, what are we doing in terms of the behavior we support and not support? And this gets me to my continued bafflement that there are Christian leaders, evangelical Christian leaders like Robert Jeffress here in town, who continue to support Donald Trump, who have defended his statements of the weekend, the things we learned over the weekend, and continue to support him to this day because of those statements. I mean, saying they're absolutely okay, and I'm absolutely baffled by that. I mean, we're talking about abuse and harassment. We're talking about, as we said a moment ago, him bragging about that as a possibility. What I said this morning in worship is that it was bad when Bill Clinton did it. I was angry, frustrated with Bill Clinton. There was no excuse when he did it, and it's bad that Donald Trump has apparently done this serially over his life, and I don't understand how evangelical Christian leaders can dismiss that
So when you had lunch with Robert Jeffress this week, what did he say?
I've never met the guy, actually.
I'm shocked.
I know.
Okay, so before the show, Laurent, you were saying you feel there's a difference between what Bill Clinton did.
And you know, we talked about it before the show, and I think you have cleared it up. But you know, in general, I don't understand this correlation of bringing Bill Clinton's name up in lieu of what Donald Trump has been revealed as far as on tape. I just don't see the correlation. Bill Clinton, obviously, you know, is a philanderer, you know, cheated on his wife. No one is defending that. But to me, having consensual sexual relations with someone else, it's not the same thing as going up groping women who didn't ask to be. I just don't see the correlation there.
Those are definitely different behaviors. The correlation is more subtle than that, in my view. And it has to do with understanding what sexual abuse and sexual harassment is. And that often that takes place in an unequal power situation. If you're the President of the United States, to take his example, and you're having a relationship with an intern, that is not an equal power relationship, or a boss and a coworker, or a minister and a congregant, or a teacher and a student, or any other kind of situation. Those are not equal, or a billionaire and a young woman, let's say.
I get that.
So the correlation is, there's already been people this weekend saying, well, what Donald Trump did was consensual because, you know, on the tape he says, women let you do it. That's what he says. Well, even if they let you do it, it's not equal. You're a billionaire and you're the star. And he admits that they let him do it because he's the star. So write that is the admission of the harassment and abuse and the unequal situation. And it's bad when he does it, and it's bad when Clinton does it. So that's, again, you know, and we can talk about their apologies, which I want to in a minute, but that piece is where I think there is an equivalency.
But as a woman, I hear your words, and I hear something so crucial, and that is the word let. So he's already done it in order for him to find out
absolutely.
That they're not going to fight back.
Exactly.
And so,
right.
You know, and that's, that to me just crawls all over me when he said those words. Yeah. They let you do it. So he can just do anything, and it's on them,
right?
To stop it, to say it's okay, to scream.
Exactly.
It
was uninvited.
To slap him, to knee him in the groin.
Right.
Whatever. He's doing it at free will.
And I got to tell you, one of the things that happened over the weekend when this broke, I got Facebook messages and private conversation with women I know both here in Dallas and around the country, and they're having some women are having a reaction almost like PTSD mm-hmm. where they're remembering their own situations where these sort of things happen. I mean, I had some women write some horrific stories of this very being groped in exactly the same way
and
by some other man, and being terrified
and angry
and not knowing what to do about it. Not, you know, that piece. That's wrong. And I think so what brings me back to Jeffers and us as Christian leaders is to say we have to denounce that whoever does that, if any man or woman, frankly, abuse, and because it happens in the LGBTQ community, happens in the straight community, abuse and harassment, no gender, they know no sex, no orientation.
Yeah, going back to the Clinton Trump correlation, whether you think there is one or not, you know what else? The other thing we talked about off the air is that is why is it even being brought up in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
He's not running for president. You know, I think that's just that just screams sexism that you know a woman is having to fuel questions about something that an error that her husband made. She didn't do it. I don't understand that. I don't know if there's somebody that bothers me. I guess because I know something personally about it.
Hmm. Wow.
But,
okay, go ahead, Penny.
Well, I was thinking all she needs to do, and this may not be all she needs to do, but if he starts attacking her in that way tonight in the debate, I think all she has to really say is, I've been absolutely faithful to my spouse for 41 years. Through 41 years of marriage, and their anniversary is Tuesday. That'll be 41 years. have you, and just leave it at that. Because it's about her and it's about him, you know?
I mean, I just can imagine if my daughter, God forbid, grows up to marry a man, if she happens to marry a man, and they have some issues, and she goes in for an interview, and they ask her, has your husband ever cheated on you? First of all, that's highly inappropriate and illegal, but for whatever it comes up, and she has to defend that or even deal with it, and may not get the job because of it. I just don't get that. Mm-hmm. Why is Bill Clinton's name even being brought up?
Okay, and here's the only thing that I can come up with, and it has to do with ancient religious belief. The woman is property. Okay, yes. So you start with that. Like, one of my favorite monuments in Texas is the Ten Commandments on the Capitol grounds. One of the reasons it is because there are 11 commandments on that statue. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I have
not. Oh, you have to go. Count.
What? Okay.
They took the 10th commandment and divided it into two. Because the actual commandment is that you should not covet your neighbor's wife, ass, or something else, house, something like that. So not their animals, their women, or their other
property.
Belongings. So women are just lumped in. It's divided out. You shouldn't covet your neighbor's wife, and you shouldn't covet your neighbor's, and I forgot the wording, but property. So that it becomes no adultery and no theft. That's not what it was meant to be. And that's not how women were treated. Women were treated like property. So in this case, if he cheated, it's obviously her fault.
Right.
Yeah. What really gets me is the right-wing Trump supporters are saying that she threatened women who were... have a connection to Bill Clinton. And that's just simply not true. They've made that crap up. And for Donald Trump to retweet this thing about Juanita Broderick and her tweet and her accusation that Bill Clinton raped her, it's flowing now on social media, the affidavit where she says that did not happen in 1998. Mm-hmm. And... which is true. I don't know, but she's losing credibility. She's now, years later, trying to say that it's the case.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis, and our guest is the Reverend Eric Folkerth from North Haven United Methodist Church. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more.
This is Rawlins Gellin, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet.
Our Title IX woman quiz.
Yep.
That's always a bad sign.
Yeah, thank
you.
Our guest is Eric Folkerth.
Quits.
Our guest is Eric Folkerth from North Haven United Methodist Church. Just off air, we were talking a little bit about sexual assault, and I said to Patty, her school is doing a fabulous job taking care of their problem.
And Patty's alma mater is?
Baylor University, Jerusalem on the Brazos.
And explain what happened this week.
The person charged with enforcing Title IX on the campus at Baylor resigned. The woman in charge, she just happens to be a woman.
Because they give her a raise, a promotion.
I think she's butting her head against the wall.
Yeah. I was just commenting. That's a bad sign when your Title IX person quits.
No, indeed.
Before the break, we brought up the question of why do we think that this is what's stuck? This is what is breaking everything. And do you think it has anything to do with, because sexual assault and the culture of rape has been in the news a lot lately, not only with the Baylor, there's been two high-profile cases of young men who've been convicted of rape and let off with literally a slap on the wrist. So it has been in the news a lot lately. Do you think this is just one more element to it?
And we set off mic again. I think it's because so many women have their own stories that they carry. I mean, I think almost every woman I know has a story of harassment or actual abuse or assault. It's kind of horrifying when you start to peel it back. And so, it's a very, very broad issue and very, very broad problem.
It's struck a nerve. And I mean, I have my stories. I'm one in those, one in four. But to read the stories related by friends of mine on Facebook just last night,
right?
You know, so many are just incredibly traumatic, and I think they're so brave to tell their stories.
I do
but
too.
We need to have this national conversation,
yeah.
Because if guys think that this is just locker room banter, they've got another thing coming.
Right.
And I love the tweet that said, talking about bragging about sexual assault as locker room banter is false. It's bragging about sexual assault.
Right.
And that's what it is. That's what Trump did. That's what Billy Bush, egged on. And then the whole thing where he says, oh, I got to do some Tic Tacs before we get off the bus. Because, I kiss women against their will all the time.
I can't help it.
And they get off the bus, and here he is, in front of this actress who they're supposed to lead them to the studio. And Tic Tac tweets out yesterday, Tic Tac respects women.
Yeah.
And they've totally rejected. And when Tic Tac dumps you. Like Skittles before them, yeah. It's pretty serious. But he obviously knows what to do, what his MO is. I do my Tic Tacs, and then I can get out there and do, he's done this before.
Right.
Speaking of rejection, the New York Times had a list this morning of 150 politicians who are either representatives or senators or governors who have now previously endorsed and have withdrawn their endorsement. That includes John McCain. It includes a number of people. Now, in Texas, there's our leaders made appropriate statements about how this is unacceptable behavior. Of the list of all of the congresspeople and senators and top three Republicans in the state, only one, a congressperson from El Paso, has now withdrawn his endorsement. Kay Granger had never endorsed him.
Never endorsed him.
Oh, was there a second one?
Yeah, there was a second. I can't remember who it is.
I didn't catch that one on the list.
But I saw two in the list. And then, but let's be clear, that's the Republican delegation.
Of the Republican delegation,
the
yes.
The congressional delegation, who are Republicans.
For yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened before? That's voting for Trump.
Has that ever happened before? I can't think of an example of that.
I don't think so. Not at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly not at this point in a campaign.
This is unprecedented.
But this was
stuff.
This was my again, going back to what I can speak to, being a preacher. This was my incredulity over the weekend to see that happening, David. To see all those endorsements being rescinded, and to see his most fervent backers be these evangelical preachers who were coming out defending and excusing what he's done. I don't get that.
I don't
understand
either.
From a place of faith, when you got politicians rescinding their endorsements and preachers saying, "Oh, but he's still awesome." I don't understand that. It makes no sense to me. Again, I'm not even talking about Trump. I'm talking about them. I'm talking about as a person of faith. I don't understand how other people of faith, who are leaders, Jeffers and others, can do this, and what moral ground they think they're on to do this. These are very serious issues, harassment and abuse. And even back to the locker room banner thing, because this is another conversation. People are saying, well, that's just the way guys talk. Well, I don't know. I'm in a very unique set of guys because I hang out with a lot of preachers. And I tell you, nobody I know talks this way. Nobody. I remember it when I was a kid. I remember it in junior high. I remember boys in the locker room talking this way in junior high. But I don't remember. I am not around adults who talk this way. Now, I'm not saying I'm an angel. I'm not saying anybody I know. I happen to think that in their hearts, most men are. I said it this morning in church. I said, I think most men are pigs in their heart. I said that. And I think that's true. I think that's true for all of us, gay, straight, any of us. But what we do in our inward thoughts and our heart and what we do publicly, those are two different things. And to have a guy who's admitting to doing this –
And bragging about it.
And bragging about it. That is very disturbing to me. That's a different thing.
And I think your key word was when you were in junior high.
Yeah, yeah.
This man was 59 years old when he made these comments. So
59.
So I don't.
He was young.
But he's very much an adult. Very much an adult. And I just wonder, what do you think about, because for all the people that were mentioning who are taking their support away or mentioning they no longer support Mr. Trump, there are some that still are, including women. There's a woman on Facebook this morning who was going off about her support for him, and she said that we are not trying to hire somebody for the puppet. We're trying to put somebody in office. What's the difference as far as, you know, the qualifications, as far as, I guess, morals?
Well, in a weird way, I sort of agree with that.
I do, too.
In a weird way, I sort of agree with the fact that we are not hiring somebody for the pulpit. And that was sort of the point of my sermon this morning. We talked about being anointed by God's Spirit this morning, and that being people of faith and being anointed is different from being elected as a leader. Those are different things. And we need to be very clear that those are different things, and we need to not be mixing those. I'm not ready to anoint Hillary Clinton. I'm not ready to anoint Donald Trump or anybody else. In fact, the thing I said this morning, and I, you know, I'm very involved in politics. You know that. People know that. I love talking about it. But the political system is different than our system of faith. And so I actually sort of agree with that in a way. But that's precisely the point that I keep coming back to, is what are we as people of faith doing? What are these other faith leaders doing trying to defend that? I don't see how you can defend that. I didn't defend back, you can go back and look, I didn't defend Bill Clinton back in the day. I was very, very angry with him, and denounced what he had done. Because it was wrong.
Doesn't a leader need to have a set of values, though? And wouldn't certain values, like, if you're a member of a certain religion, we're going to ban you from the country. If you come from a particular country, we're going to build a wall to keep you out.
Yeah.
If you're a certain race, you're lazy. And, oh, by the way, this white racist group, I don't really know much about them, so I'm fine with their support.
Well, the Bible says over and over in the Hebrew scriptures that we share, you shall not have separate laws for the immigrant and the citizen, the foreign-born and the citizen. There shall be one law for all of you, because you were once an immigrant in Egypt. And that same phrase repeats about 6 or 7 times in the Hebrew scripture. So it's very, very clear. So, yeah, we can look to our faith and ask the question, are the policies that politicians are espousing, are they consistent with what a faith perspective?
But what if we just don't want them here?
Well, if you're a person of faith, you can't do that.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, so there. And my point was, you don't want to promote a certain religion. You
right.
want to know that whoever is president is going to represent everybody.
Right.
But shouldn't there be some universal values that leaders share?
Yeah.
I just want to share this really well done post on Facebook from a friend of mine. I don't know if he wants his name mentioned, but are we being fair to Donald Trump? Let's not forget that he made these remarks many, many years ago. He was just 60 years old. Today he's a far different and more mature adult. The reckless years of his 60s are so distant in time they fail to reflect the temperance of the man he is today. People grow. Donald is not the same silly boy who bragged to every Facebook friend over 70, haven't you done things you later regretted? like reveling in the fact that you could grab a woman in any place you chose with complete impunity due to your celebrity and vast wealth? Be honest. And I mean, it's to your point that it was just basically 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a changed man now. This is what he wanted to say in his apology, which was not an apology
at all.
In fact, there's about 20 seconds of apology of a 90-second piece statement by him on video, and the rest of it was attacking Hillary Clinton. To me, that's not an apology, and it's certainly not an apology meant to be from the heart.
So do we think
he didn't own anything?
So do we think this is the Clayton Williams rape comment moment?
Wayne Slater does.
You know, hopefully in Texas it will be. I saw something in the paper this morning that this really puts Texas in play. So,
well, and here's why. Because if they chop up their votes on the Republican side with write-ins and whoever else may be listed on the ballot, we're going to have a big list. There's a lot of people who filed in Texas to be on the ballot.
And just quickly,
Hillary's only gaining votes.
There was talk about him stepping down. Now, he really can't do that because ballots are already printed. Some states have started early voting already. You can't have those people go back and do a do-over. It doesn't work that way. So let's say he stepped down. Let's say a candidate for public office dies before the election.
That's happened.
So what happens there?
I can't remember exactly. I know that in the last cycle there was a guy, I don't know what they do, but there was a guy who actually won, who had died a couple of weeks before the election, and I don't know what you do.
The way you fill a vacancy. He's elected, and then
I would assume,
like Carnahan in Missouri several years ago.
Maybe that's what it was.
Person in line would just automatically be bumped up.
Well, I mean, that person's elected because
so that means Pence
even
would
if
be
the
president.
Republican Party says, oh, no, you're really voting for Pence or you're really voting for somebody else, when the electors get together, no, you're really voting for Donald Trump because that's the name that was on your ballot. And I don't know what you're thinking. You're either thinking, oh, okay, I'll vote for that replacement, or you're thinking, I really do want to vote for Donald Trump. They don't know. So you're voting for Donald Trump.
But the ballots have been printed, as you said, and the early voting's begun in many, many states. And in the states where you can change the ballots, there are people at big outlets, New York Times, Washington Post, those who've done the math, the electoral math, on that aspect of it. And of the states that are left that where he could get off the ballot and move Pence up or whatever they're going to do, and that they can't do. They really can't do anything. He would never win. There's not enough electoral votes in those states that he would, you know, he can't win.
Here's what's really frustrating to me as from a moral point of view about this whole discussion about should Republicans get him off the ballot. It's very clear to me they're having this discussion because they've decided they don't think he can win. They haven't decided it's because of all of these moral issues we've been talking about. They've decided because he's going to lose the election, so they think. I find that almost as disgusting.
Laughable.
It's about winning and losing more than, and again, this gets me back to this point I keep raising, more than the moral choices that people are making. So you'd rather get him off the ballot because you think that he's going to lose than because he actually said these things.
You know, I was thinking one other moral issue that is related to this. Using the rules of the Republican Party, Donald Trump won the primary.
Right.
He got the nomination. And now because they decided he's not going to win, is that a reason to replace him?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
That's not moral either.
That's why I think it's laughable. Do they want to do that every election? Oh, well, let's change now at the last minute.
Right.
Let's get somebody else because we might lose. That's insane.
And they're more worried about Dan ballot races, I would think.
Yeah.
This could completely change that.
One of the things we talked about before we came on was, Trump clearly wants to compare this situation to Bill Clinton's situation. And I hope people, I think that's actually a pretty interesting comparison for the reasons I said earlier, for the power relationships of abuse and harassment. I think in that limited sense, they're very similar. What's very different is, at least so far, was very different. And there's time. Trump can make an actual apology, which I agree with you. I don't think it was an actual apology. But let's remember, you know, Bill Clinton denied this for years, and it was very frustrating, obviously. He was eventually caught. He did it under duress, but he eventually issued a very, what I thought, powerful, genuine apology. He apologized to the American people. He apologized to his staff. He apologized to his wife. and he apologized to Monica Lewinsky and her family. Period. No, he did not then turn it and say, but here's why I did this.
Or here's who I want to blame.
Or here's why, right. He said, I did it. Then he said, but apology is not enough. Yeah, I listened to this morning because I wanted to make sure I remembered it correctly. He said, you have to have genuine repentance. And then he listed the things he was going to do in his life, among which was to go into a period of counseling, spiritual counseling, with several clergy, one of whom, Tony Campolo, who I admire, who is an evangelical, by the way, and some other steps that he took to make some changes in his life. Now, I don't know Bill Clinton. I've met him once many, many years ago. I don't know what's going on in his heart today, but I know that that's what you have to do in this kind of situation, mm-hmm. and that is what he did in his situation. So if Donald Trump wants to talk about that, then I think he needs, as a person of faith, I would say he needs to do that same thing. In what ways is he not only going to say the words, I apologize, but also say, apology is not enough. Here is how I am different. Here is what I am doing differently in my life. Here are the steps I am taking to ensure that I will not treat women this way or say these things about women. That I if you're going to talk about apples to apples, that's what he's going to need to do.
And then this is the tweet from Richard Hines paraphrasing Trump on this. Don't judge me on the man I was 10 years ago, but please judge Hillary on the man her husband was 20 years ago.
Right, before his apology.
Correct. Precisely my point.
I have one quick Bill Clinton story. When he was first running for office, so it had to be 92, maybe it was even back in 91, he had a stop up somewhere in northeast Texas on his way to Dallas for a campaign appearance. And there was a small crowd that had gathered to see him, and the press was there but hadn't gotten to the spot where he was going to be speaking yet. And there was a disabled child who was there, and Bill Clinton sat down on the ground, put the disabled child on his lap, and he was just talking to him. When he saw the press coming over, he said no, and just waved them away and gave the child back to his mother. That, to me, is who Bill Clinton is. I mean, I always think of that story when people talk about what a horrible person he is. No, he's not. And I wonder, in this case, would Donald Trump ever do something like that? And I have to give him the benefit of the doubt and just simply say no, and I won't say hell no. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. Eric Folkearth from North Haven United Methodist Church is our guest, and we're talking politics and ethics. We'll have a little bit more right after this.
Hi, this is Beletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink. We're talking to Eric Folkearth. We're going to talk a little bit more about apology and what an apology means and whether what Trump did after that tape was released was actually an apology.
The written statement was not, because it said, if you're offended. That's a big old conditional one.
Let's talk about that in a minute. Right now it's between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
On Rosh Hashanah you begin, actually earlier in the month you're supposed to be spending the month apologizing to people who you've wronged. And by Yom Kippur you're supposed to have done it. In Judaism it needs to be a sincere apology. It needs to be delivered three times if the person hasn't accepted it. Mm. And if it is an actual apology, the belief is not that what you did is okay, but you're released from the guilt of that apology. And accepting an apology doesn't mean, oh, sure, we're best bosom buddies again. It's more a matter of just letting things go and getting on with your life also. First of all, like you said, this apology was conditional. If you're offended... So if you're not offended, it's okay what I did.
Again, it puts it, it's like his assault. He puts it the onus on everybody else to step up and say, I was offended, or whether how they felt about it. It's not coming from a place that's where he knows he has offended people. There's no question. He has offended people.
When you say, if you were offended, you're sort of admitting, well, I'm not really sure whether you're offended, but if you are,
Exactly.
I mean, it's,
It also kind of makes it, what I did wasn't so terrible, but I know some of you are not going to like it.
Right.
So,
and some of you, and some of you don't care.
But let's talk to us a little bit about what an apology is and why that's important in politics.
Well, it's important in life, I think. And I think it's the hardest, it seems to me it's the hardest thing for politicians to do. Because our whole system, and here we have to talk about the whole political system, our system is set up to be adversarial and is set up to not allow people to do that. If you apologize, you're seen as weak. You're pounced on. Aha! We got you. It's seen as the gotcha moment. So I think, not even talking about Trump, but just talking about society in general, I think we do that way too freely, that when people do try to apologize, we jump on them and we pounce on them, and that makes, that just continues the offense. And so it's important politically, but I think it's the most difficult thing for politicians to ever do. Morally and spiritually, it's important, as you just said, David, because there's really no way to move on in life without doing that. And and the second apology, so Patty, you talked about the first apology being conditional. The second apology, it seems to me, the 90-second video was also conditional in its own way, in that it changed the subject and diverted the subject. He didn't say, "I apologize, period." He said, "I apologize, but Bill Clinton did far worse." Now, again, whether Bill Clinton did worse or better or the same, what Donald Trump's doing is changing the, theologically, morally, spiritually changing the subject, politically changing the subject back to Bill Clinton. And he's ignoring, and that he's asking people not to pay attention to him, but to say, well, what I did wasn't so bad. And the second piece is completely missing, and that is, after apology, what are you going to do that's different? How are you going to be different? What actions will you take that ensure you won't do this again, whatever it is that you offended? And that's the way real restitution, real reconciliation can happen between people. And there was nothing. I have heard Donald Trump say not one word about, he said he's changed. I have heard him say that he's changed, but he hasn't said how, and he hasn't said what he would do to ensure that he won't do these things in the future, or won't talk about women this way, won't do these things in the future.
But is it about that? I don't know, because he says, "I said some foolish things," and then later in the day, yesterday, there were lots of his supporters on the air talking about this issue, and they wanted to lump everything he said into, "I've said some foolish things." Well, he apologized for that.
Right.
No, he didn't, because right. when you're with your spouse or your best friend or a family member, and they're angry with you because you've done something wrong or said something, whatever it's done, they want to know that you understand.
You understand it, correct.
What they're upset about, what you did that was wrong,
right?
What you did, and what, and that thing was wrong,
right? That's part of an apology.
Because that's how you move on. That's how you move on.
Because
I understand that was so awful of me to say that. I will never say that again. That was a really awful thing, and I'm so sorry I hurt you.
Right.
I mean, everybody knows in first aid, when you experience a burn, the very first act is to stop the burn.
Right.
So you remove the sources of heat, you
right.
cool the skin. You know, I mean, and what he did was let the burn go, because he didn't stop. The burn is still going.
Right.
For Trump.
Not that Trump has ever been accused of being a puppet, but I'm just, we can only speculate. I'm just really curious as to what his manager or campaign manager, his spiritual leader, what are they telling him? What kind of advice is he getting?
He's getting none, because they've left. and that's to my point, as I was saying during the break. He's been kind of left high and dry, and they say he's insulated in Trump Tower, and he's not speaking to anybody. So he's going to go roll into that debate tonight with no prep, with no positive way that he can turn this around. He's got nothing going for him tonight, because he's not. I mean, they canceled their appearances on morning talk shows.
Well,
Sunday.
We'll see. Best rated television in years.
Well, it's a very dangerous situation to be when you feel like you're backed in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels to me, the metaphor feels to me like he's sort of backed in the corner. And if you're an animal backed in the corner, you tend to lash out. And I think it's a very dangerous place for him to be.
When I heard I said some foolish things, I was wondering, okay, which ones are you
including? Yeah, which one are you talking about?
Well, that's important. It's important to name. That's what I'm saying. It's important to name what those things are. That's real apology. When, if you again go, it's on YouTube. Go back and look at Bill Clinton's apology where he said, "I apologize." I think he said the depth of my sorrow toward the nation, my staff, my wife, Monica, and her family. Is immeasurable. I can't remember his exact words, but he named specifically what it was.
And you know what's interesting to me is that in all those years since, there's never been another accusation. There's never been you know, he's really led an exemplary life.
We can hope. I don't know his soul. You don't.
Right.
Let's hope.
But for appearances, he's out there working for humanity.
Yeah.
I mean, the Clinton Foundation is saving probably 11 million people a year with HIV and AIDS medications. I mean, his works are good.
That's one area they work in.
Yeah, one area. But we've not seen any sort of accusations or even hint at them in the years since he was in the White House. At least we haven't.
One of the things that's been interesting, obviously, working in the church, you get to know a lot about charity and faith-based charities and secular charities and how they work together. And this whole conversation about the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons has been fascinating to me, too, because it's well documented that 90% of Clinton Foundation money goes to these causes you're talking about, to HIV prevention, to works with the poor here in our country. 90%.
Which is very
good. Let me tell you something.
Incredibly good.
As a person of faith who works with charities, who has evaluated charity, I've been on committees that evaluated charities, a 90% rate of return directly to the cause is excellent. That is considered outstanding. 10% overhead. That overhead, by the way, does not go to Bill and Hillary, which is the most maddening
Chelsea,
which is the most maddening piece of the conversation, the insinuation that they have become wealthy because of the charity. And so what it does is there's all this conversation about the pay-for-play conversation with the charity. So what's the pay for play? So Hillary's asking for donations for foreign governments that go to AIDS drugs for Africa? Oh no. She got foreign governments to pay for AIDS drugs for Africa. Oh, what a terrible thing. I don't understand what the pay, I've never understood what is the pay for play.
And it's really like 6 to 8 people among thousands that she met with over 4 years as Secretary of State.
They but I still don't understand. What is the quid pro quo there? Again, to compare Trump's foundation, it's documented that his foundation has made political contributions, which is against the law for
a
nonprofit.
Been fined by the
and he's been fined for it. So there's a definite quid pro quo there. Charitable money going to political causes.
Okay, let's say there was pay for play. Worst case scenario. So I got your government to do something good, and now I'm going to give you something for it as Secretary of State in so much as I'm able to. And that thing, which we're both working for the same goal, is going to be to your benefit and probably ours. Why is this a bad thing? And that's a worst case scenario. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I, to my knowledge, there's been no evidence of meetings that they had meetings, but there's no documented evidence that the State Department changed their views. The quid pro quo would be if the money went to benefit the Clintons, and the money didn't go. None of the money from the Clinton Foundation benefits the Clintons. Mm-hmm. They made their money on, you can argue, should you make money on speaking fees or all that? Okay, fine. Or books, whatever. But the foundation...
Excuse me, Ronald Reagan perfected that.
Yeah. I'm saying you can. But you can't argue, you can't say that they got rich or personally benefited from the foundation.
Right.
If a foreign government gave money to the foundation, it saved a kid's life in Africa. That's what that money did. So I I commend that. I commend anybody, anytime charitable donations go to make the world a better place, I commend that. So I've never understood that whole conversation about the foundation.
It's coming from the same people who are against the ACA or against expanding Medicaid. How could religious leaders be against that? You're giving health care to people who can't otherwise afford it. Isn't that something? I mean, look at our hospitals here in town. There's Methodist Hospital, see, I mentioned to you first. Presbyterian, Baylor, which started as Baptist and Jewish. They're all religious institutions, or were. They're not
many of them
now.
Yeah, they have religious roots.
That's what religions have always done.
Been concerned with health care, absolutely.
Yeah,
the United Methodist Church says we believe health care is a basic right. Yeah.
So, okay, so we're talking about apologies. So you apologize, then there's repentance for what you've done, and in some cases, reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And again, the Clintons are being criticized for not divorcing. And
I think that's so insane.
Trump, for anyone
who's been in a relationship for a long time, you go through rough patches.
I thought that's what.
And periods of distrust and trust again, and you work through it. That's the idea of marriage: is that you are committed to one person through thick and thin, through all the litany of things in that vow.
In part of the vows, till death do us part. I mean, and so they have worked through whatever they needed to work through, and they're still together, hadn't been divorced.
But obviously these evangelical leaders don't think so. So in Christianity, Eric, is divorce a virtue?
Well, that's what's ironic, especially among evangelical Christians, these same people we've been talking about the whole time. No, it's obviously not a virtue, and it has always been a very big deal. In fact, for decades, divorce was seen as disqualifying of somebody for public. I'm talking, in the 40s, 50s, 60s. Divorce would have been seen as disqualifying for a presidential candidate or for a clergy. Even to this day, unfortunately, there are divorced clergy frowned upon. Thankfully, much of that is changing. But in the conservative evangelical world, this world that we've been talking about, which I'm not a part of, and I sort of have to talk about them with the same bafflement that maybe y'all have. No, divorce is a terrible thing. And so, yeah, I don't understand the idea of, well, why didn't they get divorced? I think it's pretty remarkable that they've lasted all this year. I don't know what goes on in their house, but what I know is they've made the commitment to stay together, and that's a hard thing to do. I think it's hard to stay married to somebody that long, especially when you've been dealing with this kind of very public humiliation that they've had, that they've both gone through over the years.
And then earlier this week, as they were introducing this idea that they're going to be attacking Hillary based on Bill Clinton's behavior in the past, 20 years ago, the spokespeople out there doing this were Trump, who's been married 3 times.
Yeah.
His second marriage was an affair.
Yep.
While he was still married, very public.
Same with his third.
With his third as well.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that tape on Friday was months, just a couple of months after he married Melania. He's doing his tic-tac thing. And then we also
have... start kissing a woman.
He just can't help himself.
He's a newlywed.
Yep. And then Newt Gingrich is out there.
Yes.
Broaching this whole big thing. Mr. I've been married 3 times and, talked to his wife who had cancer in order to say, I'm leaving you, I'm divorcing you, in order to marry someone younger, my younger model. And then the third guy is Rudy Giuliani, who traipsed his girlfriend into Gracie Mansion in New York City, and his wife was livid. Get your girlfriend out of our home with our children. I mean, all of that. These are the people who are attacking Hillary because of Bill Clinton's behavior. And when Trump is asked about it, he says, I don't talk about that.
I heard some people say that those people specifically, it was 9 marriages between the three of them.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Think about that. 9 marriages between those 3 spokespeople.
And I like to point out, Trump has... 5 kids by 3 different baby mamas.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of his kids related to this tape on Howard Stern. He said, "It's okay if you call my daughter a great piece of word we don't use on this session."
I cannot fathom that.
Ron,
it's just insane.
But no, no, I, No.
Just wondering. We're not parents, Patty. I thought maybe it was okay.
But you know, I am a woman, and if I were Ivanka, right, I would be mortified by the things he said. After she was born, he said, I hope she's got, you know, a hot body, and
right,
when she grows up, and then, you know, he talked about if he weren't...
It's what you wanted for your daughter, right?
Oh, exactly.
If he wasn't Eric? Her father, he would want to date her?
I just can't fathom it. But this is a part of what we're talking about. Look, all men have this stuff in our minds that... is terrible, but we don't talk about it. And thank God we grow up, and some of us have daughters and learn how you're supposed to behave around women.
And some of us don't have children, and we still learn.
Still do it anyway.
How to behave around right. other people. We're completely out of time. Eric, I want to thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Eric.
Right, come down back. The street from us. Yeah, come back again.
Be happy to.
And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly. Have a good week.